flashing on and off. Our own neuroscientists can map out a person's patterns of thinking, right? Yuan bobbed his head up and down. Out of the corner of his eye, he could see Tamara leaning forward temptingly. She had undone several buttons of her bodice. "Well, this artifact goes a step or two farther," Humphreys continued. "It allows your deep unconscious thoughts to come up to the surface where you can see them clearly. It allows you to see who you really are, who you really want to be."
"Like a mirror,"
Tamara breathed. "Right. Like a mirror of your own soul." Yuan considered for a moment, then said, "Then it's not showing you what will be. It's showing what could be." "Like the ghost of Christmas yet to come," said Alex. Yuan felt disappointed. Nothing is certain, he realized. That beautiful vision. Then he realized the truth of it. That beautiful vision is something to aim for, a goal to guide my life, a star to steer by. "It can be a tremendously powerful force, that artifact. I've got to find out how to control it, how to use it." Humphrey's hands clenched into fists. He turned to Tamara. She seemed completely relaxed now, in charge of herself.
"It could be enormously powerful, couldn't it?" she suggested.
"Enormously," said Alex Humphreys. "Whoever understands how to use it has a tremendous edge over everyone else." Yuan saw vast dreams glittering in those steel-gray eyes.
"In the meantime, what do you intend to do with us?"
Tamara asked, her voice low, smoky. Yuan had heard that tone from her before. Alex blinked, the spell of his fascination with the artifact's power broken. Sitting up straight in the desk chair again, he said, "Well, my father wants you both skinned alive, you know."
"Is that what you want?" Tamara purred.
His face went utterly serious. "That depends." Yuan started to speak, but Tamara leaned even closer to the desk and said meltingly,
"I'd be glad to do whatever is necessary to help you understand the artifact."
"What do you want us to do?" Yuan asked. "You two go build new lives for yourselves. As far as HSS is concerned, you're both fired. I'll provide you with a healthy separation payment, then you're on your own."
Tamara looked disappointed. "On my own?
With your father wanting me dead, he'll hunt us down." "You won't have to worry about that," Alex said. "I'll see to it that he doesn't bother you."
"How can you do that?" Yuan asked.
Alex took in a breath before answering. "Fair enough question." He hesitated a moment. Then, "Yes, my father wants to prevent anyone from learning that he collapsed when he saw the artifact. He was perfectly willing to order murders." Tamara shrank back from him a little. "But I've had a university full of medics and psychologists trying to put his ego back together. I've convinced him that the best thing to do is allow you two to go your own ways, providing you never mention you ever heard of the artifact." Alex's voice grew iron hard. "Not to anyone. Ever." Yuan agreed. "That's fine with me." "It'll bring down the wrath of God on you if you speak a word about it," Alex warned. "It would be your death warrant." Tamara nodded reluctantly, then asked,
"What about Harbin and the old woman? They actually saw him at the artifact."
"I'll protect them," said Alex. "I won't let my father harm them."
"You can do that?" Yuan asked.
Alex smiled grimly. "I can try." And Yuan realized what was going on. He's playing a power game against his father, and we're pawns in his game. As long as his father knows there are people alive who can tell about his collapse, Alex has the upper hand. Yuan turned toward Tamara, but her eyes were still fastened on Alex Humphreys. If he noticed her focus on him, Alex gave no outward sign of it. He said, "All right, then. You'll come with me."
"With you?" Tamara asked. "To where?"
"The artifact, of course. We're going to study it. I want to find out how it works, who put it there, why they put it there." Somehow, Yuan wasn't surprised, but he heard himself ask, "We're going back to it?" "Of course. Right away." Ore Ship Syracuse, Backup Control Pod.
The jolt nearly knocked Theo out of his command chair. Angela, standing behind him, was thrown to the floor.
"Collision," blared the ship's computer. "Propellant tank 6, ruptured."
Theo got out of his chair, helped Angela to her feet.
"Propellant tank 6?" she muttered, slightly dazed.
"It's been empty for years," Theo said. "No loss." With both of them on their feet, Theo said, "Check with Mom, see if she's okay." As his sister bent over the intercom panel, Theo scanned his working controls. "Cripes," he thought. "First the solar storm and now a collision. How much more can we take?" Spin rates increased, he saw. A whole section of the rim's been ripped open. Must have been a sizable rock that hit us, maybe a meter across or more. He pecked at the control keyboard. Got to fire the spin jets. Slow us back to normal, otherwise the increased angular momentum will start to shake us apart. But when he called up the spin jet display, half the lights were in the red. "Damn," he spat.
"What's the matter?" asked Angela, looking frightened.
Tracing the schematic display with a forefinger, Theo answered, "The collision cut the circuitry to the spin jets on that side of the hull. The system won't fire with one set of the jets out."
"Can you override?"
"No, damn it. I'll have to go outside and repair the circuit manually." Immediately, Angela said, "I'll back you up."
"Okay," said Theo.
"We'll both get into suits, but you come back here and take the command chair while I'm outside. If I get into trouble, you'll be ready to come out and help."
"Right," Angela said. "No argument."
As they clambered up the tube tunnel toward the living quarters and the main airlock, Theo felt the ship vibrating. A slight tremor that would only get worse, he knew, unless he could get the cold gas jets to slow their spin back to normal.
"How's Mom?"
he shouted to Angela, a few rungs of the ladder above him.
"She sounded okay. She said she was working on the air filters when the collision hit."
"She wasn't hurt, was she?"
"You know, Mom. She'd have to lose an arm or a leg before she'd admit she got hurt."
Pauline was waiting for them at the hatch to the airlock.
"I've pulled out your suits and checked their air tanks. Both suits are ready for use."
"Thanks, Mom," Theo said.
Pauline helped them into their suits, checked the seals, then sent Angela back toward the control pod. Once she reported on the intercom that she was safely at her post, Pauline started to pull her own suit out of its locker.
"What are you doing, Mom?" Theo asked.
"I'll be your backup. Help me into my suit, please."
"But Angie's in the pod.
If you get into trouble, I can be outside with you in 3 minutes, the time it takes to cycle the airlock. Angie's 15 minutes away." Theo recognized the tone of his mother's voice. All that arguing would do was delay the repairs he needed to make. It would never change his mother's mind or blunt her determination.
"Okay," he said, with a defeated sigh. Yet inwardly he knew his mother was right, and he appreciated her wisdom.
Once outside, Theo used his suit's maneuvering jets to skim halfway around the ship's rim.
"How does it look?"
Pauline's voice sounded calm enough, but he thought he detected just a trace of anxiety in it. Shaking his head inside the suit's glass-steel helmet, Theo replied, "Like some giant robot ripped the whole section apart."
"That bad?"
"Could have been a lot worse. The rock must have come in at a flat angle. It grazed the hull, just plowed along this one section, and then went on its way."
Angela's voice cut in.
"Can you fix the circuitry?"
"Yeah, sure. But it's going to take time. And air." Theo knew his mother had filled his suit's tanks, but every breath he took sucked up precious oxygen. "Then there's the maneuvering jet propellant. Cold nitrogen, same as the ship's rim jets use.
How much more do we have in store?"
"We can take nitrogen out of the air we breathe, but that ups the oxy percentage, which can start its own cascade of problems." He shook his head again, this time to clear away all the disturbing thoughts. No time for that, he told himself. Fix the problem at hand. He didn't realize how long he'd been at his task until Angela called.
"You've got 1 hour of air left, Thee."
Looking up from the welding job he'd been doing, he floated out to the limit of his safety tether with the welding laser in his gloved hand.
"Almost finished," he said. He wished he could reach inside the helmet and scratch his nose. The headband he wore kept the sweat out of his eyes, but he could feel it trickling uncomfortably down his cheeks and soaking the collar of his shirt. "No time for complaining," he told himself sternly. get the job done. At last he called